following program is brought to you in living color on NBC.
Hey, where y'all at?
It is a thrill. I love this show.
You're telling me a big fat lie.
I was hoping for funny, crazy.
I will get on stage on Broadway and I will reenact the rantings of Charlie Sheen one day.
Think you can replace me with some other guy? Go ahead. It won't be the same.
'Tis mightiest in the mightiest.
Do not bring Shakespeare into this.
You're so smart.
Oh, really? Well, so are you.
And yes, the rumors are true. They smoke, they drink, they use bad language in mixed company. They're extremely rich and they can flash more bling than most posses in this room.
I know exactly who that is. That's the mother that loses every game. That's Kirk Cousins. Get rid of him.
Wow.
Bros, come on. I love you, bros.
Does everybody have to be crazy today?
Now get me, Savior!
OG to the goal. Worked over there by Sherratt and Sider. Topside to Farivari. Wrister on the way. Dips wide of Alex Lyon. Rebound. Score! A stuff from McMichael. Troy Carlson unloads. Patsy. Rebound. Score! Dylan Strome. Closing in here. Carlson for Strome. He scores! Washington closes the homestand in style with an overtime win.
It might not officially be playoff hockey, but it's sure feeling like that, isn't it? Welcome to the show, everybody. I am Bob Matthews, delighted to have you along here on the Hockey Podcast Network. With games being played by the Caps pretty much every other day, it's kind of hard to give you a show that is, well, you know, completely up-to-date game by game. So what we are going to try and do is concentrate on the bigger picture. And the bigger picture as it stands midweek here, right before the game in Toronto with the Leafs, is that the Caps are 2 points ahead of Detroit for the eighth and final wild card spot. They're also just a point behind Philly for third place in the Metro Division. So the big advantage that the Caps have as we come down the stretch is that they've got a couple of paths to the playoffs, one being the wild card, of course, and the other being finishing third. It's not going to be easy. The schedule is a little daunting down the stretch, but as we talked about last week, this team is playing well now. It is starting to gel, and it's both the youngsters leading the way, as well as Alex Ovechkin. Ovi was actually held off the board last game of the homestand, and it was the first time in about six or seven, I think, that he was. But the Capitals were led by a couple of youngsters in Connor McMichael and Dylan Strome, two of their centers of the future. McMichael had a big goal. Strome had two, one of them in overtime that gave the Caps the win over Detroit. So as they come down the stretch, I think they have got as good a chance as anybody here to snag one of those playoff spots. What you're looking at right now is you've got three teams basically fighting for two spots, and that's the Caps, the Red Wings, and the Flyers at this point. And it's anybody's guess as to how it goes. I would give at this point the edge to Philly and Washington only because, again, they've got more paths into the playoffs right now than the Wings do, as Detroit is 10 points behind, you know, Toronto as we head into the final month of the regular season. But again, things looking good for the Caps right now. And right now we, of course, you know, this is the time of the show when we take in and we talk to some of the players. So somebody, please, if you don't mind, cue that dramatic music for us. As always, time to go in the locker room. Again, it was the kids that led them. Dylan Strome and Connor McMichael being the two big stars. Strome getting his 24th and 25th goals of the season. McMichael his 17th. And McMichael, you've heard me, you know, sing his praises for a couple of years now, but it's been really fun to watch him blossom into a bona fide top six NHL center, and that's what we're seeing right now. Whether that continues in the years to come, we'll have to see. But Connor McMichael has become a top six center for this team. Again, he got his 17th earlier this week against the Red Wings. And we talked to him after the game in the locker room about what it's like, because remember, for him, this is his first real taste of NHL playoff hockey.
Yeah, it's unreal. It's exciting. I feel like you have a little bit of nerves, but once you're out there, you're just playing your game. You can feel the emotion and the energy from the crowd, and both teams, especially tonight, battling for a playoff spot. There was tons of emotion, tons of effort from both teams. So that was a fun one to win for sure.
Well, you also asked Connor, you know, what has been the secret sauce here to this resurgence? Because remember, the trade deadline wasn't a complete and total sell-off, but it was pretty damn close. And he said that this group has just all of a sudden figured out a way to click.
I think we're just really highly motivated right now. We have a great mix of veteran guys and young guys that want to make the playoffs, and for the older guys, they want to get back there and do what they did before. So I think we're just battling as a team right now. We're playing as one, and we're doing it for each other.
And he said this team knows that it's not getting any rest here as they come down the stretch, that every game they play from here on out has got those playoff implications.
It's huge. We know every game that we're playing now has a lot at stake and a lot of implications on the standings and in the playoff race. So we just want to keep battling, keep pushing, and doing what we can control to find a way into the playoffs.
It's a team playing with a lot of confidence right now, and teams with confidence, those are tough teams to beat. But the Capitals will have their work cut out for them. Toronto on Thursday night, and then later this week it's on to Boston. Home to Cap One Arena to play the Bruins. And then they will start April this way. At Buffalo, home against Pittsburgh, at Carolina, and then the rest of the season goes like this. Home against Ottawa, on the road against the Red Wings, at Buffalo again, home against Tampa Bay, home against the Bruins, and they close out the regular season on April 16th in Philly against the Flyers. That might be a play-in game for the playoffs. Who knows? Let's take a break. When we come back, we switch gears. Craig Hoffman from the Team 980 joins us. We got to talk all of these rumors we're hearing about the Commanders and the draft. It's next as the Bob Matthews Show rolls on right here on the Hockey Podcast Network. We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on ice. And this week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. It's so easy. I'm going to tell you how to do it in a second. But the thing I love about DraftKings is, I mean, it's like being over there at Rivers in the sportsbook. Everything you want right at your fingertips. For instance, I'm on here now. You know, Blackhawks Capitals tomorrow night at Capital One Arena. Anything you want. The over-under is 6. Washington is minus 225 right now. Hey, you want to bet on that? You want to bet on the money line? Whatever you want. You want to take the Blackhawks? You think they're going to win? You can get action on them as well. It is so easy. All you got to do is download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with the promo code THPN. New customers bet $5 on the NHL. You get $200 instantly in bonus bets. That's only on DraftKings Sportsbook with the code THPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See DKNG.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2024, all rights reserved.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Time to talk a little Commanders, and there is nobody better to do that with than the host of the Hoffman Show on the Team980.com, fellow John Mulaney aficionado, Craig Hoffman, bringing him in right now. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, Bob. How are you, man?
I'm not too bad. I'm hoping you can help me out with this because I keep going back and forth. I'm like the dumb guy on Law and Order in the suspect room that they try to manipulate one way or the other. Jaden Daniels and Drake May. Last week I had Rooster on. He had me back on the Drake May bandwagon. Now I've got you, and I'm like, am I right about that, or do I need to go back to the Jaden Daniels bandwagon? Which way are we going here?
I'm unfortunately sitting next to you being like, am I the one that they're trying to manipulate here? It is so hard, man. And I think it's because they're very different players with very different flaws and very different strengths. I mean, we can lay out what those are. I feel like a lot of people know them at this point, but I'm happy to give you the rundown. But then it comes down to the evaluator and what you're trying to fit them into. So it comes down to which of those characteristics that are positives or negatives do you care about the most, and what system are you plugging that quarterback into to say, like, this is what we're looking for. Do we have a square hole or a round hole? And that, of course, influences the shape of peg that you would like. So I think that's the hard part, Bob, is you've got Drake May. He's got prototypical size. He's got a really big arm. He throws the ball better than Daniels does over the middle of the field. His feet are incredibly inconsistent, and that causes inconsistencies within his accuracy. And he played on a bad football team in North Carolina. There just wasn't a lot of talent around him on the offensive side of the ball. Meanwhile, Jaden Daniels played on one of the most talented offenses in the country. He's got two first-round receivers on the outside. He's got a couple of NFL linemen in front of him. He was on rhythm and on time a lot because his receivers were always open and his line was pretty good. And he did it against SEC competition, and he just doesn't have a lot of throws on tape over the middle of the field. He's obviously doesn't have a prototypical size. He's less than 205 pounds, which is kind of the magic cutoff point. And we can talk about more if you want about why that's the magic cutoff point. But that's kind of, you know, the pluses and minuses. Obviously, also Daniels is an incredible athlete as a runner, and can, you know, run away from SEC defenses for 80-yard touchdowns. So, like, which guy do you want? And I'm like, I don't know. Depends on the day. And so I'm right there with you. But that's the resume for both.
You know what I think it is, and as everybody who's listening to this knows, you and Logan Paulson, you guys do an incredible show. He is great at breaking down tape. You ain't so bad yourself. Let me just say that. But to me, it's which one of those guys is going to fit Cliff Kingsbury's scheme the best, what Cliff Kingsbury wants to do. In all the tape that you guys have watched and all the conversations, are you guys leaning, you know, one way or another, if you put it through that prism?
Yeah, it's hard because I would even say that there are some of those things that I just mentioned that are really beneficial in Cliff's system for Drake and some for Jaden. So in like the year we go back to a lot is 2021. That was probably their best season in Arizona. And they threw the ball outside the numbers a lot. Like Cliff likes to attack the outside. And if you look at the personnel they're going to have here with Terry and Jahan at receiver, you would imagine that's where the focus of the offense is going to be as well. And well, Jaden Daniels is the best outside the numbers thrower probably in the class. And that's because he had those wide receivers at LSU and just consistently attacked with them down the field. So those throws are comfortable to him, and he's done that at a high level with good accuracy and all that. Meanwhile, there is a lot of stuff that's over the middle. Drake is the better thrower there. Drake has the better arm, which characteristic wise would say, hey, if we can get some of the footwork stuff down, he'll actually be the better thrower outside the numbers. He also has more experience with the RPO game, which is also hilarious because Jaden, and I say hilarious because we wind up talking ourselves in circles. And at this point, I'm just laughing because exactly. It's a month to draft and I don't know what the hell I think anymore. but Jaden is the better runner, but Drake actually has more experience reading out the RPO type of stuff that exists in Cliff's offense, which is like a decision-making thing, not an athleticism thing. And obviously has played in an air raid based system that is very similar to what Cliff has been running his entire life. And while Cliff says it's not going to be the air raid, it certainly will have air raid principles, which would tell you that despite Jaden having more experience as a player, as a fifth year guy who started umpteen million games in college, Drake has more experience in the system. So yeah, we have looked at it through that lens, Bob, and it hasn't gotten us very far because we can go either direction. I think where we land, though, is that's ultimately a good thing that they have good options. And by the way, we haven't even talked about J.J. McCarthy, who I think is also a good option.
You know, at this point, I'm like, why don't we just do what the big man Mitch Tischler wants, trade down and take a tackle in the first round?
I think they do need to take a quarterback in the first round. But like, this is kind of why I am in part team trade down, because I don't know that there's a big, huge separating factor. And if you can, you tell me you get one of the three and something else, I'm down for that.
Because, you know, one of the knocks I've heard lately on J.J. McCarthy is, yeah, it looks great on tape, but look at the pocket. It's so clean. You know, what's he going to do when he's got heat coming down on him?
Yeah, and that's a huge question, and that gets into the weight question, because everyone thinks weight is about durability. And, of course, there are questions there. Like, if you don't have as much meat on your bones and you get hit, that's going to hurt more. But ultimately, it's about, like, can you withstand, like, guys pawing at you in the pocket, essentially. And we saw this with Bryce Young last year in a major way. And we've seen this with, according to Nate Tice's crack research, our friend over at Yahoo Sports and The Athletic, Nate looked at every quarterback season of guys under 205 pounds since like 2000. And it's basically like 1 year of Aaron Brooks, 1 year of Jeff Garcia that were good. And then if your name's not Kirk Cousins, your season's like, you never had a good season. Kirk is the massive exception. And you think about what Kirk is, he's a guy who gets the ball out very quickly and efficiently. And that's how he kind of overcomes that. He also moves pretty well within the pocket, but it's not really about durability. It's those guys get sacked at a really high rate because defensive tackles and defensive ends can literally like reach through an offensive lineman and yank a guy down with one hand versus you try to do that to, you know, Patrick Mahomes. And we see Mahomes shrug off that kind of pressure all the time. And he's got the best sack to pressure ratio percentage in the league. So it's about how, like, how good is your base? How good are you at avoiding getting literally dragged down in the pocket? And I think Jaden Daniels' sack to pressure ratio being horrendously bad. And the weight, you're like, well, those two things go together. That's a gigantic red flag. But also he runs so well that you're like, I don't know, we could probably teach him that if he feels anything, just run and we'll be all right. So like, you can convince yourself of anything, but like, to me, that is, I ultimately, to answer the question and you know, we'll give everybody a headline here. I would lean Drake May because of that. That is like the biggest red flag of all the red flags, because I just don't know that you can coach that out of him in the way, like, you know, you can put him in the weight room and all that kind of stuff, but it's not like he's 21 or 20, he is 24. And so his body is more developed versus Drake at 21 and footwork being more coachable. We saw it with like Josh Allen, right? You get it right, and all of a sudden you're talking about someone who's really, really good. That's why I tend to lean Drake if you stay at two, but I definitely understand the Jaden Daniels argument.
Okay, I guess I'm back on the Drake train for a while. How about 205 pounds? Why is this such, explain why this is such a big marker, especially when we're talking about quarterbacks.
Yeah, so it goes back to what I was just saying in terms of your ability to withstand pressure in the pocket and not have pressure turn into sacks, right? We heard about this stat a lot last year with Sam Howell, sack to pressure ratio. In other words, how often when you are under pressure does it turn into a sack? And that number tends to be way higher for quarterbacks under 205 pounds statistically. And then anecdotally, you start watching as to why, and it is literally being the ability to be dragged down in the pocket. Where if, you know, the best example maybe ever is Ben Roethlisberger, who I can't stand for a number of reasons, but that dude was hard to tackle, right? Really? Josh Allen, Pat Mahomes, these guys are all bigger. You know, Pat's not 6'5 like Allen is, but he's a solid 6'2, 230 or whatever he is. And he's really hard to bring down. He's got a great base. And if you get a hand, and even if you get like a grab a jersey or shoulder pad, he has a way of like just getting out of it because he's so strong. But it's also a mass issue. Like, would you rather have to, if I tell you you gotta tackle a dummy, would you rather the tackling dummy be 10 pounds or 150 pounds or 300 pounds? You'd rather it be 10. That's really, you could just be like, boop, it's over. Right. And so that's what we're talking about here. It's the literal ability to withstand the strongest men on the planet yanking at you and still be able to make plays down the field or with your legs, with your arm, whatever, throw through contact. You know, how often have we seen Mahomes make throws while getting tackled? It's because he has the mass to withstand it and the strength to withstand it. And those two things are related.
Interesting way to break it down. Hey, what'd you think of, what do you think so far of the free agent season? I mean, when this team goes to training camp, we all knew that there was going to be a massive roster overhaul. But, I mean, we might be seeing two-thirds of this roster as brand new as opposed to last year. They didn't waste any time, did they?
No, they really did not. And part of that is just how the contracts work. They had a bunch of guys who were set to expire, and it's like, all right, all of you can walk. You can come back. No, not you. You all can walk. And so they were really able to remake this thing quickly. And I mean, you'd obviously rather have some talent that you felt was good, but I had heard like Friday before free agency, I was like, they did the review and they didn't really like what they saw. And so I expect a lot, not necessarily like expect big signings. And I think, you know, you heard like John Keim and Ben Standing and Nikki and Sam at the Post and everybody that's on the beat kind of saying the same thing, like don't expect big signings, but expect them to be active. And that's exactly what they did, where they're like, we're going to spend a lot of money spread out over a lot of players. And I think it's schematically, are they getting the guys they want? Two, culturally, are they getting the guys they want? And three, like, we got to get some guys out of here who don't fit one or both of those things. And so I think they got great leadership. They got great familiarity with the coaches, which I think helps create buy-in throughout the roster. I think they also got like a great middle class, which is something that doesn't really exist in a lot of NFL locker rooms, but I think exists in the good ones. Like, do you have those players that aren't on rookie minimum contracts, bunch of young guys, and then like your superstar veterans? Do you have people in between? It keeps your locker room connected. It also makes you better because everyone's not a rookie on that doesn't know what they're doing. You get some veteran know-how of how to study, but also how to play in the room. And so I just think they did a really good job of like setting the analogy I've used, Bob, on Take Command and on the show, is they've set a foundation here for what they ultimately hope is a Super Bowl winning house. And in 3-4 years, a lot of these guys aren't going to be around, but somewhere deep below what we're all looking at will be a really solid concrete, you know, whatever they use in construction, because I don't know anything about construction, to set underneath, we can build on this. And this year is the foundation year. And I think they've done a great job of establishing that.
Yeah, you and I, we hire people to do that construction stuff.
That's a disaster. Like little household tasks, like I can figure it out. Yeah. You know, YouTube, Google, there's ways to fix stuff. Anything that would qualify as construction, that's a phone call.
You and me both, my lawnsman, you and me both. So, you know, when you look at it, I think that's what you were just talking about with fit. I think that was one of the biggest indictments of the past regime, is that there were too many square pegs trying to go into round holes. And what I'm giving, you know, the new coaching staff the benefit of the doubt with is, you know, the guys that they've gone out and gotten, I think, are hopefully guys that are going to fit the scheme on both offense and defense, right?
Oh yeah. And I think that's the hardest thing, is like, we're trying to figure out what the scheme is on offense and defense. They clearly have some ideas, and I think that there's obviously some hints we can look at, but it is really like the Wagner signing was a shock to me, not because I don't think that Wagner's an ideal signing. Like, he's someone I would have pushed for them to sign. I was just like, oh, I thought Luvu was going to be the Mike linebacker and Jamin was going to be the Will, and they don't have, like, that's the two starting linebackers. And then Wagner comes in. I'm like, oh, well, what are they going to do with the other two guys? Like, does Luvu become a Sam strong side linebacker that's blitzing all the time, or has very specific responsibility? Because he was 127 tackle guy playing mostly Mike linebacker last year for Carolina. And so they clearly have a vision for some of these guys. And I think they're kind of going to build the defense. This is what they've said. And obviously we'll see what it ultimately looks like, but they're going to build this defense around the talent. So I think they've got some really interesting, flexible pieces in Luvu and Jeremy Chin and Quan Martin that are going to create different fronts, different looks, different everything on the back end. And then offensively, I mean, it's going to look similar to what it looked like in Arizona, I think, because they have a lot of the pieces in place. Obviously, the Zach Ertz piece is Zach Ertz. So they've got that at the tight end spot. They have a great Y blocking tight end in John Bates, who, you know, people are like, great. Isn't that a stretch? No, he's really good at that specific thing. It's not the kind of position that gets you Pro Bowl votes, but like it's an important position, especially within this offense. And then, you know, Austin Ekeler obviously has the familiarity with Anthony Lynn, and we'll see how they use him. But I tend to think he'll have a ton of catches this year, getting him out in space. Brian Robinson is similar to what James Conner was that 2021 year in Arizona. Big physical gap scheme guy, but also has some versatility out of the backfield. Then obviously your big play deep ball wide receivers on the outside, 2-4-3 guys in Terry and Jahan. And then I think the draft is huge for them at receiver. If I were them, I would take both a big X receiver, like big physical 6'4 body type, your prototypical, what we think of as a one wide receiver. And I'd also take like a slot guy. You know, we in our latest mock draft took Ladd McConkey from Georgia because he fell into the second round to us. And we're like, well, shoot, if he's there, like, we'll take him. And so a guy who can kind of create some space underneath. So I think it's been interesting to watch kind of how they're building this and try to take guesses at what the scheme is going to look like. But I do think one of kind of the principles of this coaching staff, starting with DQ, is let's see what we got and then let's maximize it versus trying to say, we got to find this because there's not always going to be a perfect fit.
All right, last question. Meetings are just over, the offseason meetings. What do you think about the new kickoff rule?
I love it. I think this is great. I think you're going to see, because the touchback is now to the 30-yard line, you're going to see more teams being like, we're not going to just boot the ball through the end zone. That's too much yardage to give up. And thus, we're going to see the kickoff back, or the kickoff return back. But it's going to happen safely because you don't have guys running with a 40-yard head start into contact with the sole mission of blowing up a blocker. Like, it becomes this kind of extended, weird run play, which I think will be fun and cool. And I think one of the really interesting things to watch is what kind of innovation do we see from special teams coaches? This is totally new. So how do you line up your guys in kick coverage? How do you line them up and on kick return? Do you do a bunch of reverses? Do you have throwbacks? Like, are you running plays? Or are you just like, this is a giant, you know, zone or gap scheme run play. Everybody's got their blocking assignment and we're going to get our most dangerous guy with the ball and try to give him a carry. And I also wonder too, Bob, like, here's another wacky bit to think about. Do we see more like high impact players, like offensive players, especially, that we typically don't see on kickoff return or punt return because they're too scared of getting injured? If it's just one more touch on something where there's not some massive run up and big collisions, like, do you see more of the best space players in the league? Like, I'm trying to think of an example. Do you see Tyreek Hill return kickoffs for Miami?
Yeah.
Because why wouldn't you? Like, what's the downside? He takes one more hit, you know, or if you give up a couple, like 3-4 more hits a game, but I get him in a ton of space with like pretty decent blocking set up out in front. If I was Miami, I'd be like, yeah, Tyreek, we pay you a ton of money. And it's not just to be a wide receiver. Like, we want to get the ball in your hands. Here's an easy way to do it. So it is going to change the rosters because you need people to cover kicks really well. You know, the kick returner is now going to be back in vogue. You see immediately Cordero Patterson signs in Pittsburgh on a multi-year deal. But I also do wonder if you see like a Tyreek Hill. I'm thinking of a guy like Jahan Dotson who they want to get the ball more here. Do you see some of those guys become kick returners all of a sudden because the collisions aren't as violent and the injury risk isn't as high?
That's a very good point. I didn't really think about it that way. Tell you what, we'll talk about the Christmas Day games the next time you're here. He's the host of the Take Command podcast and the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 in DC. Craig Hoffman, thank you so much, my friend. I really appreciate it, as always.
Always a pleasure, Bob. Thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for us. Mix the clock on the wall and say we got to get out of here. The Maple Leafs, the Bruins, and then shuffling off to Buffalo on April 2nd. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see how it all turns out. Remember, the wise man once said, if you're on your bike tonight, as always, wear white. These